Hey friends, I'm Katie Hunt and welcome back to Proof to Product. Today's guest is Trudy LeBron, the author of The Anti-Racist Business Book, an equity-centered approach to work, wealth, and leadership. Trudy is the CEO of ScriptFlip LLC and the creator of the Institute for Equity-Centered Coaching. By the time Trudy was 16, she had two children and had dropped out of high school. All of the odds were against her. Today, Trudy runs a million-dollar coaching and consulting firm helping entrepreneurs and coaches build anti-racist businesses and become equity-centered coaches and leaders through ScriptFlip certification programs. Trudy holds a BA in theater, a master's of science in psychology, and is currently ABD in a PhD program in social psychology. On today's episode, we're talking about Trudy's book. She shares why small businesses are poised to make real change in anti-racism work, why she thinks the phrase, "it's not personal, it's business," is complete BS, and we talk about where small businesses should start when taking steps towards equity and anti-racism. Before we dive in, I wanted to let you know that we recently put together a resource library that houses all of my free content in one place. This includes my Delegating Masterclass, How to Know If Wholesale's Right for You class, my Blueprint Masterclass, and more. And we've got some new exciting things that we'll be adding soon, including books that we love, like Trudy's. So to get instant access to this rich resource library, head to prooftoproduct.com/resources. I'm Katie Hunt, wholesale expert, business strategist, and mom of four. I'm also the host of the Proof to Product podcast. Since 2011, I've coached thousands of brands whose products can be found on the shelves of indie shops and big box stores all around the world. If you are a creative entrepreneur that makes and sells physical goods, you're in the right place. Here on Proof to Product, you'll learn new strategies for product development, sales, marketing, and more. It's like your weekly dose of business school, and we're going to help you confidently grow your revenue in your own way and at your own pace. So let's get started. Hi, Trudy. Welcome to Proof to Product.
Hi, how are you?
I am excellent. Thank you. I want to congratulate you and thank you for writing the Anti-Racist Business book. It was a really powerful read and I'm excited to talk about it with you today.
Thank you so much. That is, it was a long process writing the book and kind of getting it out into the world. So I'm so happy to hear that you enjoyed it.
Absolutely. So you opened the book talking about identity, your identity, how others identify themselves, and acknowledging the perspective from which you wrote this book. Do you mind sharing your background? What led you to the DEI work that you do today?
Sure. So I grew up in an inner city in central Connecticut in the 80s to a biracial couple. My mom is white. My father is Afro-Latino. And at that time, there were not a lot of mixed kids. And I grew up with this real experience of not feeling like I quite fit in anywhere or that I wasn't enough to be in any particular, to like fit rightly in any particular community. So I grew up with this hyper awareness around who am I and what am I, because that's what I was asked constantly. What are you? What are you? You don't look that way. Or do you speak that? Or, just like all those kinds of questions.
Yeah.
So it's always been, it's always been something that was very present for me. And then I also, my mom worked as an executive director in a nonprofit doing social services work forever. So I grew up kind of in that environment. My father was in the military my whole life. And I just kind of grew up with narratives and kind of people talking about justice and right and wrong and how people were being treated and who wasn't being treated rightly. Mm-hmm. And that just really kind of shaped who I was. And then as I got into my older teenage years, I was a teen mom. And so that layered a whole different dimension of exclusion and identity and narratives about the world kind of telling me who I was supposed to be and what would come of my life because I had made, in their eyes, such a horrible mistake of dropping out of high school and having children. So yeah, it's always been around and I've just been so aware of how identity shapes our various identities shape our experience and shape the way that other people interact with us in all environments, right? In our social environments, in schools and institutions. And most recently, you know, my interest is really in how that shakes out in work and in business.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, one concept that kept coming through is that in your book is that this is work that everyone needs to be doing. And yes. I think, well, I'm going to ask you, do you think there's a misconception that this work is only for big businesses to take on?
100%. 100%. The fact is that most people work in small businesses, you know, businesses that are local to their communities, to people's communities, and they're not big businesses with huge millions and millions of dollar budgets, you know, but people are tend to be working in offices where there's less than, you know, 50 people. And so if we reserve this idea of DEI work to corporations, tech, educational institutions, we're missing so much of the population who are interacting with small businesses every day as employees, as consumers and community members. So this is work that everybody needs to be doing.
In addition to the reasons you just listed, I think small businesses are poised to make this change because they're also a lot more agile than some of the big businesses. Do you agree with that?
100%. One of my favorite things about the way that our business runs right now is that we do work mostly with small businesses. Mm-hmm. And not necessarily small because the budget is small, but because the teams are small. And I've done this work in big corporations and big educational institutions. And I've worked in nonprofits. I worked in nonprofits for years. And the work is so much easier to facilitate and get done in small businesses where people can make decisions, where they can get real, where they're not worried about politics or, you know, any of those other kinds of things. They can just really kind of, once they commit to something, they could make an adjustment and a change and do better.
Yeah. They're not trying to pitch it to shareholders because they are the shareholders.
Right. They are. Exactly. Or wait for a board or worry that like someone else, you know, you're going to have a new principal next year and everything's going to be different, you know, in the context of a school, right? No, right. Small businesses are really able to, once they really get on board with it, they're able to have so much more impact far more quickly.
Yeah. You talked about capitalism and how it's changed and there's different types of capitalism and you're kind of introducing a new type of capitalism, justice capitalism in your book. Can you explain to our listeners what that is or how you define that?
Yeah. So what I'm actually trying to get people to consider in this book is that there is a difference between the different ways that we talk about capitalism and the different ways that capitalism functions in our society. And especially for folks who come from a real justice-oriented or equity-oriented worldview, a lot of those folks have a like struggle in business because they want to reject capitalism and they want to just kind of say like, I'm not a capitalist. It's not about the money, you know? And so they create all this big unhealthy narrative around capitalism, but capitalism isn't just one thing. Capitalism is so many things. And there is absolutely 100% a toxic version of capitalism that exists that, you know, allows shareholders and CEOs to make millions and millions of dollars while simultaneously laying off employees or cutting healthcare and all those kinds of things. That is one of the negative outcomes of capitalism. But capitalism as an economic system is also the thing that allows you or I and many of the listeners to just have a business in the first place, to borrow money or to take a loan or to get an investor if that's what they need to do, and to just be able to operate business and own it, right? Like that is also capitalism. That is not the case everywhere. And I think that we need to recognize that there are things that we're able to do, that we are able to do because we have this economic system. It's not perfect. It needs a lot of work, but it is what we have. And we can, we don't have to throw the whole thing out just because, you know, just because we don't like some parts of it. The other thing is that like, I'm not necessarily convinced that we have a better option that also addresses like racial inequity, right? Like if we were just you know, I know this is super complex, but like if we just automatically changed overnight our economic system, that doesn't mean that racial inequity will be there. That doesn't mean that that will fix like the wage gap. Like none of those all things will all still exist, right?
Right.
So other things that we need to look at in order to fix, you know, the way that we work and the way that we live. Now, Just Commerce, that I write about the book, and I'm not, you know, I am kind of posing it as a potential concept for an economic system that has broader goals and metrics for assessing the health of an economy, right? But I'm also thinking about this, and I frame this concept to clients that I work with who really want to reject capitalism, but need another framework, right? And so this framework can be a system of business and commerce, which is just the exchange of goods and services that is rooted in equity and justice, where we're looking at things like diversity and health of communities and, you know, not like exploiting people, but compensating them justly. So there are all these measures that I propose in the book that start to help us assess, like, how are we measuring success of our business, of our work, of our economy, of our communities?
You said in the book, I'm going to read this because I don't want to get it wrong. The call for an anti-racist business is a call for investment in the collective well-being of workers, consumers, entrepreneurs, and the community at large. And I thought this was a really powerful statement because you then went on to provide this analogy about installing an elevator in your business. Can you share that analogy with our listeners?
Yes, yes. So the idea that we need to create equitable systems, oftentimes people think that we're doing it to appease one community, right? Like that we're just gonna like create a policy to like fix something to make someone happy or whatever. And oftentimes people think that in order to create equity, it means that someone has to lose something. I think that's more important, right? The idea that if someone else has, that means that if someone gets something that someone else doesn't have, that thing. But the idea with the installing an elevator in the building, and the way I describe it is installing an elevator in your business, right? If you go into any building that has more than one floor and it's a modern commercial building, it's going to have an elevator, and it's going to have an elevator in part because there's a law that says there needs to be an elevator in the building because of accessibility, all of the accessibility advocacy that has been done. But everybody rides the elevator. The elevator makes the experience of the building better for everybody who walks into that building. It's not only for the people who cannot walk up and down the stairs for whatever reason. Right. And so having the elevator there doesn't take anything away from anyone. It just enhances the experience for everybody. So if we think about anti-racist business and Just Commerce and all of these ideas as not something that we're going to do because one community needs it, but because when we think about our work through the lens of equity, the experience for everybody actually gets better.
I love that. I love too how you framed it about, as a business owner, to your point, we're thinking about our customers or we're thinking about how things work or our team, but this really applies to a much broader circle of people and their experience. You say the phrase, I think you dedicated a whole chapter to it. It's not personal. You think the phrase, it's not personal, it's business is BS. Tell me more about this.
Completely. It's so, this is, what I have found over and over and over in my career is that this is the phrase that people go to when they have to make, or when they're making a decision that they know is going to impact someone who has less power negatively. And it's like the thing that we use, that we as a society, right, that we use to justify that decision, like, oh, it's not personal, it's business. But business is extremely personal in all kinds of ways, right? The relationships that we have in business, the reason why people even start businesses in the first place is often personal. But then there's this entire legal structure that gives businesses this kind of autonomy as an individual, separate from an owner or entrepreneur. And so businesses can own property, right? So that's like, we give businesses those kinds of rights as though they are an individual person. And so when we're talking about making what, you know, what I'm saying in the book is like, we actually need to make business more personal and really lean into that so that we can, and that if we do that, we will treat people different. It gives mm-hmm. us that statement. It gives us an out to do things. It gives people an out, an opportunity to do things that they wouldn't normally do if it were personal.
Absolutely. I feel like it's a buffer, right? To your point, it's an excuse. Completely. It's a way out of a decision that we're making that may not feel super comfortable, but we're going to lean on that statement instead.
Right. And that doesn't mean that sometimes those hard decisions don't need to be made.
Right.
We have to make hard decisions as business owners all the time. But if we're laying, let's say, for example, like a department has to be laid off, right? If we just say like, it's not personal, it's business, we're ignoring the ramification that that decision is going to have on not just the workers, but the extended community of people that yeah. are involved with that person's life. So if we think about it as, oh, like this is actually a personal, this has personal implications, it can change the way, it doesn't change that decision has to be made, but it might change the way that we deliver the message. It might change the supports that we put in place to provide people opportunities to transition, right? It will change the way that we do things.
Yes, absolutely. I agree with you. All right, let's get into a little bit of the strategies you share in the book. Where should smaller businesses start when taking anti-racist steps?
So there's a lot of places to start. There's a lot of things that can be done. I do think that the first step is really like a personal assessment of like mm-hmm. your understanding of equity, your understanding of anti-racism, like the business owner, the people who are in leadership in a business. Do you even understand these concepts? Like, how do you feel about them? Do you still have a lot of confusion? Is your life and community a diverse one? Why not? What were the messages that you had as a kid that you internalized? Like really taking the time to kind of face where you are and like what you've built mm-hmm. and then seeing where you, how you feel about it, right? A lot of people start going through that process of like an internal audit and they realize that their life isn't actually as aligned with their values as they thought it was. Mm-hmm. And that causes people to take different action, right? Like it causes people to sometimes change or expand their friend network or start reading books or listening to podcasts that they didn't necessarily look into. Like they take a more active role in searching out the information in the communities that are more in alignment. So starting with that is the first step. And then looking around at your business, like if you live in a community that's diverse, but your customers, you know, your customers, your clients, or your team is not diverse, why is that, right? Just starting to look and starting to take a little bit of responsibility that you created that environment, whether you did it intentionally or not. It's not to put a judgment on it, but right. It's just about having a real, like coming to have a real, moment with yourself about like, what does my business say about my commitment to the things that I have said that I'm committed to? What does it confirm that commitment or does it disprove that? So just kind of looking and seeing like, is there alignment here? And if there's not, that's when you start to take, you know, that's where there's a lot of opportunity to start taking steps to make changes.
Mm-hmm. I liked, there were a couple of things that I took away from the book. You shared a simple but effective process for reassessing or identifying company values. Do you mind sharing that process with us here? Because I think that ties into what you're saying in these steps of self audits and education and then
yeah.
alignment.
Sure. It's a very simple process, right? Like coming up with your values and your company values. First of all, I always tell people if you're like a solo business where it's like, you're in charge, you have a very small team and the business is kind of like an extension of you and your identity, then there shouldn't be any difference between the business values and your personal values. Right. And the way that I help people kind of figure this out quick, and these are, you know, our values change over time, like depending on where we're at in our life and, you know, the composition of our life and those kinds of things. But, you know, set a timer for a minute and just like list as many values as you can think of that are important to you, things that are important to you. and then take that list after, you know, list them all out and then start crossing them out until you get to the five most important ones. And that starts to get really hard for people as they're like, you know, crossing things out and thinking about like, can I combine this or that? But it puts you in a position where you have to really think like at the end of the day, what do I stand for?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then those values become the compass for your company. Like in our company and with our clients, every single, just before any change is made or any decision is made, we're asking how is this in line with our values? Is it not? If something doesn't feel right, the first place I go is like, is this in alignment or is there a misalignment somewhere? Now, if there's a misalignment in the values, then you make another decision. If things are in line with your values and there still feels like something's off, then there's like, you know, a bunch of other things to look at. Right. But at the very least, at the end of the day, if you're clear on your values and you're acting in line with those, at least you know that you're in integrity. And, you know, and I will say this might be hard. I think I talk about this like in the book, right? I'm not telling people what their values should be. That is actually the opposite of equity work and anti-racist strategy. Like we have to really honor where people are at.
Mm-hmm.
And so people get to decide like if this is a value for them or not. But if it is, then that starts to dictate how you should be showing up in your work.
Absolutely. You know, something else you talked about was creating an intentional culture and a space for others. And this, as someone that has a community that has built a community for product-based businesses, this really resonated with me. What can community builders that are listening in, what can they do to make spaces more inclusive and welcoming for a broader range of people?
The first thing that we are always trying to start with people is that inner work. Because how you show up as a leader of your community is going to influence how other people show up in their community, in your community. So doing that inner work to make sure that you're clear on what your values are and that you know how to operationalize those values. So like, what does it mean when we say inclusive or community or adventure? Maybe that's a value. Like, how does that show up? What does that mean?
Mm-hmm.
So making sure that you're really clear. And then there's all kinds of ways that you can create culture. The first one being like really making sure that you have a set of community guidelines and agreements that you're putting forth and that you're kind of telling people, this is who we are, this is what we stand for, and this is how we operate here. And that you have a formal way of onboarding and like the term we use is enculturating people into that, right? So you can't just expect that they're going to show up and know how to behave. You have to teach people like, this is what we do and this is when we do it and this is how, and do you have any questions? And really making sure that people feel supported mm-hmm. as they're coming into your community, whether that's as a customer client community member or a staff person, right? That there's a clear way of bringing people in and communicating to people what you're all about and what you stand for. Now they have the choice to say those values are cool with me. Like I can show up and embody those while I'm here. Or they can be like, oh, those values are actually opposite my values. And so therefore this is not the community for me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I thought that was really powerful. I love too the examples you provided in the book. You gave really strong examples of how things businesses are doing well as things that could be improved upon, if I want to put that politically correct. And so I took a lot from all those examples in the book. You know, something that crossed my mind as I was reading is how much of this anti-racism work should be communicated publicly. Do you feel that this is where, you know, a situation where actions speak louder than words in some instances?
I think it depends on the business, right? Like there are, and at the stage that you're at. So certainly at the beginning, if you just took, you know, your first DEI or anti-racism training, your, you know, one day workshop, that doesn't mean that you go and plaster all over your website that you are now an anti-racist business and fully trained and, you know, that you got this, right?
Right.
But that you start the journey, and eventually once you have a clear kind of strategic plan for how equity and anti-racism and all this stuff is like integrated into your work, and you've really done the work to prioritize it, then you can, you communicate it, you talk about your commitment, you let people know. And at that point, it's not performative because it's true, right? Like performative means you're doing it, it's not real. Like you're just doing it for show. It's a performance, it's pretend. But if you're really doing the work and it's something that you're valuing and putting time and energy into, communicating it publicly is just your kind of public accountability around mm-hmm. what you're doing. So I don't think that there's nothing wrong with that. I think it's really important because the more people are really taking this work seriously and doing the work and communicating about it, the more other people are like, oh, I should look into that, you know?
Right.
And all, or maybe like, oh, that's a business that I want to do, that's a company that I want to do business with
mm-hmm.
because our values is aligned.
I also think when it's communicated publicly, it does, to your point, inspire others to take action or to learn more or to implement changes in their business.
Oh, absolutely. And people start to notice it. It's like, oh, mm-hmm. like things are changing over there. I wonder if that's why.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Tell everybody where they can buy this book. Where is it going to be available? Or where is it?
So the book is going to be, right now it's available only for pre-order. So you can pre-order it online, everywhere, Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Target, all the places, whatever your preference is. I believe that now independent booksellers can order it or get it on pre-order for you. So just look at whatever your favorite bookstore is and place that order. Pre-orders are so important. Yeah. And then when the book comes out, it will be available, Barnes & Noble, you know, wherever bookstores, independent bookstores, like we were really hoping that it gets into all the shelves, which is another reason why pre-orders are so important, because a lot of bookstores that, you know, they're looking at those pre-order numbers to determine what they're going to order and have on their shelf.
Right. Right. All right. Tell everybody too, what are some other ways that people can learn from you or work with you in your programming?
Yes. The first thing is to come and hang out with me on Instagram, because I do some kind of pop-up teaching there. And we're always kind of sharing information on Instagram. And then our Institute for Equity-Centered Coaching, which is evolving into the Collective for Equity-Centered Business. That is our membership community where we do training on all of these things, anti-racism business, diversity, equity, and inclusion concepts, leadership. And so that is a good place to get started if you're newer in this journey, or even not. Like, there are people who have been doing this for a long time who still get a lot of value out of the collective because of the trainings that we're offering, but that's a good place to just start to get connected with us.
Awesome. We will include all those links in the show notes too, for everybody listening. You know, Trudy, thank you so much for being here today and for the important work that you're doing. I very much appreciated the book and will be sending it to some of my clients as well. But just, I want you to know how much your work is impacting so many of us. So thank you.
Thank you so much. I appreciate that. Thanks for having me on.
Of course.
All right, friends, I highly encourage you to pick up a copy of Trudy's book, The Anti-Racist Business Book. You can order it from local bookstores or wherever books are available. She offers excellent examples, personal stories, and insightful strategies to get us all thinking about how we can make our life, our business, and the spaces around us more equitable for all. So check the show notes for all of Trudy's links there. Thank you so much for listening until the end. If you found today's episode helpful, I want to ask you to do two things. First, share it with a friend who would benefit from listening. And second, head to Apple Podcasts and leave a 5-star rating and write a review. These reviews and ratings help us bring high-quality guests here to the show, which benefits all of you. Have a great week, and I'll be back soon with a new episode.